Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
This is Sports Daily on 97.5 and 1240 KFH, Wichita's most listened to sports talk radio.
All right, welcome in everybody to Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you. A glitchy there, but that's all right because we are... ready to rock. We got a three-man booth today. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, and Brandon Zinner with you on a Tuesday. We're going to be talking a lot of Chiefs today, as you might imagine, as the Chiefs are headed back to another Super Bowl. No surprise to Chiefs fans, but what a ride it's been to get here. We'll sort of look back at the ride and look forward a little bit to that matchup against the Eagles. It's a KU game night. So we've got that coming for you as well. Our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, is going to join the program in the second hour. We're taking your comments and commentary on our video streams. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Lots of different ways to get in touch with the program. You can do that. You can also leave us your voice messages through the Odyssey app if you're listening to us that way. Heck, you can do that even if you're listening to us in podcast form, and maybe we'll get to it the next day. Never know. We appreciate you no matter how you're listening to us. And of course, those driving to work right now on KFH. Thanks for being here. Tommy, how are you?
I was okay. Yeah, a little glitchy this morning. But we're good. I mean, hey, that's live radio for you. We're here. We're ready to roll. I blame Brandon. You know, it's the first time Brandon is, you know, kind of showing him how to run things. And I'm just going to blame it on him.
That's right. You come in and you just start pushing buttons.
Yeah.
You just can't help yourself. There are lots of buttons in there. Brandon, how are you?
Yeah, we are here. This is the first time doing the late night anchoring shift over at KWCH, making the turnaround to the morning drive here on Sports Daily. But hey, when you're coming off of covering a 6th AFC championship in person like I was just 2 days ago, I will not be one to complain. So yeah, ready for a fun morning.
And all you got to do is get yourself a cup of that Prairie Fire coffee, which is always available at the KFH and Odyssey Studios. They give us, I call it a vat of coffee. It is a very large container because there are a lot of people right now scurrying about the Odyssey Studios, the great facilities there, and everybody needs coffee.
Everybody needs coffee. Let's get coffee in our lives. Black coffee, right? Cheers, fellas, to another good morning. Brandon, the Chiefs are still unbeaten since your dog poop video. Unbeaten at home, I should say, since your dog poop video. We'll see if it can carry. And for those that don't know, what was that last year in the...
It was the Christmas Day game. Yeah, I look down at the 44-yard line. I see a golden retriever running around. And then the running stops and the squatting starts. And then you see the dog run away and you realize what just happened. Yeah, the dog of Gracie Hunt, the daughter of Clark Hunt. And ever since then, the Chiefs have not lost at home. For the first time in a year, they went to the regular season and the postseason unbeaten at home. So, hey, thanks, Chief.
And he was inspired at that point last season because they weren't playing very well. Yeah. And, you know, since that point, they've played very well. And what's really interesting is the team this year has faced as much adversity probably as any team that's been a part of this dynasty within the season. They've had all the injuries that they've had throughout the season, but not just that. They had really poor offensive line play. They had a pass blocking issue that would sink a lot of teams. It has sunk many a teams, good teams that can't block it up. But the Chiefs have overcome that. They're healthy now, and here they are again in another Super Bowl with the chance to make history. Tommy, you've been a lifelong Chiefs fan. You grew up in this part of the world. You sat through it all until about 7 years ago. Ever in your wildest dreams did you think that the Chiefs would be a part of something like this?
Maybe in my wildest dreams, but not in my normal regular dreams. No, this is beyond what I could have hoped for Kansas City. Things had been really, really bad for a long time. I always tell this story that I went to a game back in 2012, the year before Andy Reid came to the Chiefs, and Romeo Crennel was the interim coach. And that was the year that I believe the Chiefs went 2-14. It was the year of the Javon Belcher tragedy. Vibes were bad. Things were very, very bad in Kansas City. And I went to a game, I believe they played the Browns. Fans were wearing bags over their heads, and people were hiring planes to fly around the stadium with, fire Scott Pioli and fire Romeo Crennel. And like, it was really awful. It was terrible. And just to see the turnaround to now where we're talking dynasty and playing for a third Super Bowl in a row and the fourth in 6 years, like, that's just it's wild and not anything that I really would have ever thought could have been realistic.
Brandon, for us professionally, it's been a pretty wild ride too. You've been to more of these things. You've been to as many of them as anybody. I was on the earlier portion of that beat where they would just fall short until the first Super Bowl, and I was there for that one. And my travel days are over, but you've lived it right there in person for all of this. Same kind of thing, right? Just when you cover the league for long, it doesn't seem possible that teams can do this. Like, so it's such a wacky sport, yet here we are. And they're right back there in this place where they are every year now.
Yeah, my first real true Chiefs, the heartbreak experience that was for a long time that I witnessed as a professional from this side of it was the Marcus Mariota touchdown pass thrown to himself, Derrick Henry sewing the game away, the Chiefs lose to the Titans in the home playoff game. And in that moment, you don't know what's going to be ahead. They have Patrick Mahomes sitting over on the bench, and you're like, yeah, they're probably going to be turning to him, but it'll probably be a little bit before we can get back here and see this playoff success again. And then, I mean, all we have seen since then is nothing but AFC championships. It's not something I don't think any fan could have dreamt up. I don't think it's anything that anyone in the organization planned on happening or even would have dreamt of, going to seven consecutive AFC title games, all these Super Bowls. It's been nothing short of magical, and just such a hat tip to Andy Reid, to Patrick Mahomes, and I mean, just giving Kansas City and the surrounding area something now we can rely on. Yeah, just playing for a Super Bowl every year, guys.
I mean, clearly the only people who saw this coming were Roger Goodell and Taylor Swift, right? They've been working on this.
And the refs. Been
working on this now for a long time. Yeah. To get make sure she's got, apparently her next album will be really good. I'm not sure how that works, but everybody else is just sort of watching like this is crazy. It is, and it is crazy. And here's the crazier part. Why, this isn't the end of it. Win, lose, or draw in this Super Bowl. Like, Pat Mahomes he's in his prime right now. Andy Reid may coach forever. We'll continue to talk about the Chiefs. We'll look back at the season, this just wild and crazy season, too. It's Three Man Booth today on Sports Daily. Your comments, welcome. We'll be right back.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hey, listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to KFH Radio. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. Includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info for this national contest right at kfhradio.com. Welcome back, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Brandon Zinner with you on a Tuesday. Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, will join the show coming up in the next hour. We're talking just how wild it is that the Chiefs are a part of a dynasty like this. I know it never gets old for Chiefs fans. This season, every season is different in the NFL, and all of these Chiefs seasons have been different. Last season, it was the poor play, the losses, and then finally getting it together, reinventing themselves at a point in the season and letting their defense lead them to a title. This year, it's been this weird thing with all the fortunate bounces at one point in the season, all the injuries, all the things they've overcome. I wonder, fellas, how many times a team, as I look here, has reached a Super Bowl when they've only won three games all year by more than one score. Isn't that crazy? They've only won three games this year by more than one score, and a lot of those are within a touchdown, like the numbers within a touchdown. They just, people can't put them away. And we'll see if they can do it one more time. Now, I will also say the difference between the Chiefs in that middle meteor part of the season to the end of the season, you know, with Cleveland and Houston and Pittsburgh, it's different because they started to get healthy at that point. But it's almost like that stuff they faced early in the season has now equipped them for what they've always been good at, which is never rolling over, always being in a game right into the very end. It's just now this team this year has so much experience, Tommy, in finishing that job. We saw in the Buffalo game all the crazy statistics you heard yesterday that somebody dug up of the 240 or whatever quarterbacks it is over their careers that have played at least, you know, have been trailing in the fourth quarter at least 50 times or something. Mahomes is the only one with a winning record. Trailing in the fourth quarter as a professional, going into the fourth quarter trailing as a professional, Mahomes wins more often than he loses. Let that sink in.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. I just mentioned to Brandon during the break that, you know, at the same time, while they're always in the game, and even in the fourth quarter trailing, on the flip side, they have a hard time putting teams away themselves. You know, so you have to kind of take the good with the bad. It's great that Patrick Mahomes can play this like Superman come from behind, end of game savior to win games for the Chiefs. That's amazing. And then that's what he's become known for. And we love that. And you'd rather have that than the alternative. At the same time, though, man, there are so many times, including the AFC Championship game on Sunday, that they had an opportunity to put their foot on the neck of the opponent, in this case, Buffalo, and they weren't able to do it. Like, they were up 21-10 late in the first half with an opportunity to extend the lead and really put the game away. And so it is a double-edged sword. You hate to, like, be in that position constantly where you're playing from behind and you have to do this like Houdini act of bringing a team back into it. But at the same time, like it just makes it cinema. Like it makes it just legendary. And that's what they've become known for. It's kind of their calling card. And they show that again on Sunday.
But Brandon, it's not even, I mean, Mahomes is obviously the leader of that and gets all the credit. But if you think about the different ways in which this year, especially those comebacks, those late finishes have gone the Chiefs' way, it's been a lot of special teams involved in that. It's been a lot of defense involved in that. It's almost like this Mahomes thing trickles down. And that I think that is their strength. No matter what happens in 2 weeks on February 9th, that game's not going to be over one way or the other until we come down to the ending.
Yeah.
And when you know, essentially, you know a game's coming down to the ending, that's where the Chiefs get a huge advantage in every single game that they play.
Yeah, because no one has been more successful over a course of a career in the final minute, 2 minutes than Patrick Mahomes. I mean, just the way that if they need a touchdown, they get a touchdown. If they need a field goal, they need a stop. This team just finds a way to get it done. It's pretty remarkable, especially because you talked about the special teams. I mean, we've seen games ended on blocked field goals. We've seen, I mean, the punt return when they need it. Nico Remigio, what a revelation he's been for this team. The defense, we haven't seen many times, it feels like, this year where, yeah, you need to sew the clock away. You just need a first down. This game's over. It's been the defense that's been the one coming up with a big stop in a one-score game, and the Chiefs get the ball back and they just kneel on it. The season has looked completely different than I think anything we thought ahead of the year, just from a roster construction to how they're playing. I mean, and who knows now what we're going to see in 2 weeks.
Well, not even the roster construction, but who would have thought you'd have Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins, and, you know, like that's the crazy thing. Like it's, the adversity let them add to the roster and get to this point where they're probably better. Even, you know, like if we had to, you'd like to have Rashee Rice, of course, but if I told you, yeah, you might not have Rashee Rice, but you have DeAndre Hopkins and, you know, Kareem Hunt adds to the, like, I think you'd take that trade now, but not during the season. They've been able to patch together the left tackle position. Of course, the Eagles challenge, and we'll get into the Eagles and all those things as we go, their challenge is going to be the interior offensive line. I can tell you that's what you want if you're the Chiefs, because that's where your strength is on the interior of your offensive line. You'll take that challenge, I think, over a speed rusher on the edge. But Tommy, it's like within this season, we laughed at this season all the time, right? All the time, the way these games were ending. Blocked field goals, missed field goals, whatever it was, we just sort of laughed at it. At any point during the season, and I just can't remember, at any point during the season, was there a moment where you're like, yeah, the Chiefs aren't gonna do it this year. This isn't the year. They're not going to be able to overcome these challenges.
Sure, 100%. I mean, I think that when you're looking at the way that they were kind of piecemealing the roster together and figuring out ways to get things together. Yeah, they were winning, but I think it was honestly less about the Chiefs themselves and more about what everybody else was doing. Like you saw Buffalo not fall off at all when I thought that they were going to fall off offensively when they rebuilt the wide receiver room and all of that. You looked at what Baltimore was doing with Derrick Henry and just like how he seemed to be the missing link in what Baltimore needed to get over the hump. Then you go over to the NFC and you look at teams like the Lions that were thumping people, and the Vikings were winning games, and I don't think a lot of people thought that they were going to do that this season. Like, of course, the Eagles. Like, there were all of these other teams that looked more complete. I think that's what it was. They looked more complete. They were handling their business in more of a complete way than the way Kansas City was able to do it. And sure, the Chiefs were winning games in the regular season, but man, not by much. And it was like kind of fluky, and it was by the skin of their teeth. And then you would get done with the game and you'd be like, how in the hell did that happen? How in the hell did they win that game? And they did. And you just thought eventually the luck is going to run out. Eventually it's going to catch up to them. You and I, Jacob, had that conversation quite a few times, especially about the left tackle play. Like, eventually this is going to catch up to them. And Mahomes is going to get himself hurt. They're going to leave him out to dry. And it's going to be bad. And that never happened. And everybody kept waiting for the other shoe to drop.
He did get hurt.
Yeah,
he did get hurt.
I mean, he did, but they still won.
Like, at the end of the day, like, the other shoe never dropped. And here they are back in the Super Bowl, and everybody just kept thinking, like, man, you know, the clock is going to run out, and it never did.
It's so strange because I don't think I ever said, yeah, now I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. But that always feels like such a cop-out in what it is that we do, because it was the same thing for me last year. Like, yeah, this is really annoying and everything else, but I still think this team's going to win the Super Bowl because – you know, they've got Mahomes and they've got this defense now. They've got that always feels like such a cop out, but it's true. You don't even have to there's not this X's and O's thing. It really is. And now it's, you know, they're led by their defense. I really do believe that now, but it's whatever it is. It's that they get there and they're going to have Mahomes late in these games. You going to bet against that? Because it's as simple as that. It really is. Very similar to what we saw out of Brady. It blows my mind how whatever that thing is that we'd never seen before, right? We never saw it. No quarterback was ever able to own the end of games like Brady was. And it's the biggest reason I think that they always won. Like, they always came back. They were always in it late. And he always killed you the last time he had the ball. I mean, it's not that long ago, but we forget what was the MO. Don't give the Patriots the ball late. Don't give Tom Brady the last possession. Don't let him come down and beat you. And then we get Mahomes, and it is the exact same thing. How do you go like a history, at least in what I can recall, how do you go a history in this sport of never having anything like that? And then you just, now we're going on 30 years, basically, of not having it. Of not having somebody in there looming over the rest of the league that way. It's wild to think about. But here we are. And now they're going for their history, 3 in a row. And I got to tell you, like, as we, you know, we'll break this game down. And it's more complicated than we're making it in this conversation. But isn't that the simplest reason? Like, that you're optimistic if you're a Chiefs fan? Yeah. I mean, I pulled the numbers yesterday. When Brandon and I are sitting around the office, and just a small caveat, like the week 18 game plays into these numbers, but the Chiefs have, I don't know, like the 15th best offense by yards, maybe the 17th, I think it was, by points. Defense was a little better, but not great. And then you look over at the Eagles, like second best offense and best defense in football. And you're like, oh man, yikes. They've got the guy who probably ought to win the MVP, but won't, in Saquon Barkley. They've got as skilled a wide receiver room, a group of pass catchers at the top end, as any team in football. They've got a quarterback who can beat you in two different ways. They got a really good offensive line that's banged up, which is an X factor in that game, by the way. And they have the league's best defense this year. And that's like, yeah, the Chiefs are going to win. Chiefs are favored. It's crazy.
And doesn't that also, I mean, relate back to the Brady years too, when you look at the other teams that were around? Like, there were juggernaut teams in the NFL that it just seemed like Brady and the Patriots just beat. And there were some exceptions to it, for sure. But
well, there have, like, been exceptions to the Chiefs, right, too. The Bengals beat them. And then,
but think about the easiest one to think about is the Peyton Manning, you know, Colts team of, you know, when they had Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. And, like, they were stacked, you know, in that regard with Peyton Manning. And you know, there's a reason why Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, you know, only had one title when he was there, you know, because they ran up against Brady and the Patriots a lot. Like, there were all of these other teams. It reminds me, and Jacob, you and I talked about the comparisons with Mahomes and Michael Jordan yesterday. Like, it reminds me of the NBA teams of the 90s that the Bulls went up against, and it just seemed like Jordan was just, like, kind of knocking them down. And these guys weren't able to actually, like, legitimately contend until Jordan stepped away for a couple of years. The Olajuwon Rockets, and, you know, then you look at Karl Malone and John Stockton with the Jazz and the Knicks and the Pacers. Like, there were all of these other teams that Like, they had a tremendous amount of talent. They were built to beat the Bulls, and Michael Jordan just refused to let that happen. And that's what we see a lot of now with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes.
It's fun to watch, or maybe it's not fun to watch if you don't like the Chiefs, but it's compelling either way, Brandon. And it will be, I don't know, you know, I talked about all those numbers there. Are the Chiefs really, like, talent-wise, the less talented team? That's the other part of those numbers that is the caveat, is those all factor in all the injuries and different things the Chiefs have overcome. They're not that anymore. Like, this is a totally different team than the team we saw block an extra point or a field goal, whatever it was, against the Broncos to win that game. They're deeper at wide receiver. Xavier Worthy is now an X factor. He was not at that point in a lot of the season. He came on late, as rookies do. You've got a running back room that is insanely deep. You can run either one of those guys, and you'll be fine doing what you want to do there. Like, all of this is different probably than most of the season we saw, except that X factor. That doesn't change, right? That doesn't change that they're good at late-game situations. They're just now better, I think, in the early game than they were for a lot of this season.
Yeah, we went into the season thinking, oh, they have their number one wide receiver, and it's Hollywood Brown, and then we didn't even see Hollywood Brown until late this season. Xavier Worthy is clearly the number one receiver on this team. We also went into the year thinking that the left tackle solution is here. It's a young guy, Kingsley Suamataia. They also have Wanya Morris in the fold. Neither of those worked out. They still have their left tackle solution in Joe Tooney. Patrick Mahomes is what he is. Noah Gray was the better tight end for a lot of the year as well. The season played out in a way that we thought, but it's just in the complete 180 of really what it was. We got what we expected from the defense. The secondary had to do its reshuffling with all the injuries, but Trent McDuffie is still one of the most underrated players in the entire league. And now you talked about the Patriots run, where it was basically the Patriots and then the Colts and the Steelers were kind of the two teams that were always there that could always battling with the Patriots, it seemed like. And now we have the Bills, the Ravens, the Bengals want to be that, but until they can prove it more than twice, I still think they're kind of on that outside looking in. But, I mean, yeah, this Chiefs season, the scary thing, like you talked about in the open, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is only, what, 29 years old. I mean, barring health and this team completely learning that or forgetting how to manage a roster, I mean, I'm sorry, Bills and Bengals and Ravens fans.
Can we pour one out for Josh Allen? I know we talked about this just a little bit yesterday, but man, that sucks. It's not just he is like the embodiment of Bills fans too.
That deep breath at the start of the press conference. that will, you could be the biggest Bills hater, and that will pull your heart.
He feels, he looks like a Bills fan. He kind of feels like a Bills fan. Like, he represents that organization so well, and good Lord, have they earned one, and they just can't get it done no matter what he does. I mean, he had plenty of Superman plays in that game and just couldn't get it done.
He also, by the way, was agonizing. Extremely fortunate that he didn't turn the ball over probably four times in that game. Like, there, especially to start the game. So yeah, the adrenaline had to have been running, because those passes, he sailed them. He put the ball on the turf a couple times. Like, he was fortunate that there were not turnovers, you know.
But he lucked it. There was good fortune on both sides. I mean, the Chiefs got the good fortune of that fourth down call. They got the good fortune of the Xavier Worthy play. Like, there was good fortune. But that's, I think every team goes through that in each game that they play, especially the big ones. And that's a part of what makes the Chiefs really, really good, is they just, like, as those things happen in a game and you get those crazy highs or lows, like the fumble to Pacheco, like, they just level out so well now. And that's new to this year. That's a this year thing. Like, that's probably their super, like, they just never will vary from what it is they feel like they need to do in a game. Like, nothing shakes them at all. It's wild.
Isn't that a testament to Andy Reid? Like, isn't that Andy Reid's personality? Like, you never see Andy Reid get too high. You never really see him get too low.
I think the whole staff.
I think,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it takes a combination of everybody. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about with this. Let's talk about the other side of it then, the Eagles' path to get here. Because it's been pretty wild, too, after what they went through last year. We're continuing the conversation. It's Sports Daily. It's Albrock. It's Castor. It's Zinner. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to be with you here on Tuesday. If you want to win some HTO, you can do that right now. Just text the keyword T to the short code 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea, Free rain iced or hot coffee. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. They're good for either Wichita location or in Derby. Good luck, everybody, on that. Rick comments, and it's a good comment as we begin to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. He says the interior is not as strong of that line with Tooney having to move to left tackle. It's a good point because the Eagles' strength is their interior defensive line. And yes, Tooney moving over does impact that. I wouldn't put it past the Chiefs to tinker and think about Humphreys over there within the game. Not sure that they would, but it's an option. If the Chiefs had trouble within the game, they could make that move. I would, at least if I was the Chiefs, prepare for it, get Humphreys some snaps over there in case you did need to move Tooney over. But the one thing it neutralizes that I think is the great weapon for Mahomes in this point of the season is stepping up in the pocket to take off and run. That's what will be harder for the Chiefs to do. It makes third down more difficult when you don't think of Mahomes' ability to do that, because that's always where he's been at his strength. He can try to roll out and run that way, but let's be real. Like that, you know, that would have to be a situational thing but his ability to run up through the middle of the pocket's always been that strength here, Tommy, and yeah, the Eagles in theory could take that away without having to put a linebacker on him because they're so good in the interior defensive line.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, knowing what they've been able to do the last few weeks with Tooney at left tackle, that you try to make a change, you know, for the Super Bowl. I mean, I get the reasons why you might want to look at that just because of how good the Eagles are in the interior. But at the same time, like, what Tooney has given you on the left side has been enough to get it done. And I just think of the alternative. I think of, like, man, you throw Humphreys out there in the biggest spot when you've barely seen him throughout the course of the year and he's been injured and whatever. You know, it's not going to go well with Wanya Morris. It's not going to go well with Sua Mataia. And who knows if either one of those guys will even be active on the roster for the Super Bowl. So I think, like, I get the reason why you would want to try to combat what the Eagles like to do up the middle and bring Tooney more towards the middle of the offensive line. I'm just not sure you want to mess with what's been at least the most viable lineup on the offensive line throughout the playoffs.
Don't misunderstand. I don't mean do that going into the game. I'm talking about if you get 2-3 drives into the game and Mahomes is under siege from the middle, like the Jordan Phillips play. Remember the Jordan Phillips play where he just like picked up Caliendo and basically threw him at Mahomes. Like if that sort of thing is happening through the first handful of drives and the Chiefs, that's what I'm talking about. Like at least have Humphreys prepared if you had to make the change because of how good they are. I don't mean start the game that way. Hell no, don't do that. But you might need to get there at some point. So maybe just prepare for it if you had to, would be the only thing. Brandon, can this interior line hold up without Tooney there to that Eagles interior pass rush?
Can they? Absolutely. I mean, we have seen it throughout the entire season. The problem has never been the interior offensive line, and they've gone against some great pass rushes and some great interior play. Just in the playoffs alone, especially, I mean, just last week, very few issues, I would say, against the Bills. But, I mean, where the issue comes for the Eagles of just the interior is how this offense is designed. I mean, how many times did we see three guys in the backfield for the Chiefs? I mean, it seemed like they did it on probably four different occasions, and like, oh, they might run the ball, and I think they threw it three times out of that. I mean, the way that the Chiefs offense is set up doesn't allow for yeah, you just have an interior pass rush and you're just going to just go get off the quarterback, because when you do, there's going to be holes that open up, and that's when the Chiefs' offense is at their best, when they have you off balance on defense. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to kind of dive into it more over the next week and a half, because I know a good amount about this Eagles' defense. I mean, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Zach Bond, all these guys, but I haven't sit there and really looked into them a whole lot. Other than just casually watching the games. But, yeah, I'm excited and fascinated because it's what everybody, all the big heads are talking about with this Eagles team.
Yeah, I mean, the one-step drop that the Chiefs have now is a big part of their passing game because of Worthy and Brown and DeAndre Hopkins, if they choose to go that way, and the back. So I agree with that. And I think they'll probably be okay. I do think, though, it limits Mahomes' ability to run to some degree. Like, I think – you know, that may still happen very late in the game, but I think it'll be harder to get to that as it normally would be for Mahomes. The Eagles' run to this point is pretty intense. It's not, if you look at it on paper, right? Like, this team was just in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They got to, what, an 11-0 start last year, and now they're back to the Super Bowl. Oh, surprise, right? But when you really think about all of it, like Nick Sirianni constantly being called one of the worst coaches in football, which I just don't buy it. The fact that Jalen Hurts has not had a great year, right? Like, not really, but he hadn't needed to because they have Saquon Barkley now. But then you see a game like we saw against the Commanders and you're like, oh yeah, Jalen Hurts is still really good. Is he, you know, is he one of the best quarterbacks in this league or whatever you want to define? No, I don't think he is. Never have thought he was. But I think the Eagles have always done a really good job of highlighting his strengths. And now they can attack, sort of like the Chiefs, right? Like, what do you, if you walk into that room, and I know you can say you would like to, you know, hone in on Saquon Barkley, but the Commanders thought that same thing. And they got beat up by those wide receivers in Dallas Goedert a little bit. So the Eagles have that going for them, right? Like, you can't just walk in and say, all right, we're going to take this away. And then that, I don't know that that's the right strategy, because they'll beat you a different way if you do that. I mean, I would prefer Jalen Hurts beat me than Saquon Barkley beat me if I'm the Chiefs. I think you start there, but he still can, right? Like, he's still Jalen Hurts, still has A.J. Brown, he still has Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert looks great. It's not like it's, I don't know, Nick Foles is a bad example, but I you know what I mean, though? It's not some scrub back there. It's still Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
And he does look, he looked healthy in that game now with 2 weeks. So this will be the coaching in this game will be just wildly fascinating. And what, like, Vic Fangio and Steve Spagnuolo decide to do defensively, how many risks do they take? Because these are two offenses that can kill you if you take them in the wrong spot. This Eagles turnaround, I mean, guys, their defense was garbage last year. One of the worst in football.
Yeah, and you look, one of the things, like, with Vic Fangio that, you know, I think you need to, like, pay attention to leading into this game is that Fangio knows all about getting burnt against the Chiefs. I mean, he got burnt against the Chiefs multiple times when he was the Broncos head coach. You know, and then I know he was in Miami a year ago and got beat by the Chiefs then too. And so he's really familiar with all of that. But he's a really, really solid defensive coordinator. And so he'll have his guys ready to go. They've been ready to go all year. The one thing that I will say, going back to your point about Nick Sirianni, is that I am on record as a known and vocal Nick Sirianni hater. I don't like him. I don't think he's a great coach in general. But where I will give him a little bit of credit is that I know their defense was really bad a year ago, and I credit a lot of that to Vic Fangio this year getting them better. I feel like a lot of where the Eagles struggled a year ago was due directly to Nick Sirianni. I think that the way that his personality showed up distracted the team. I think a lot of things fell apart. They weren't able to overcome it. And the way that, you know, Sirianni is brash and just all these different things, I think was a detriment last season to the Eagles. Where I will give him credit is that I feel like, not that he's still who he is, but I don't feel like he's been quite as obnoxious, I guess, like, nationally, like, vocally, this season, and I think that he's let the play on the field do the talking with the guys that he has, as opposed to him doing the talking on the sidelines, to the fans, in press conferences, things like that. And so I'd like to think that maybe Sirianni has matured a tick and has realized he doesn't need to be the one picking fights with fans in the stadiums. He's going to let the play on the field with the really talented players he has actually do the talking.
It's crazy, though, because, A, he looks like they went and they found a fan, a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and let them be the coach. That's what he looks like.
Yeah.
That's what he acts like. That's his personality. And, you know, early on in it, it was a big part of what he did. I look at all of it for him and, the totality of his body of work. There can't have ever been a coach 4 years in that wins 70% of his games and has been to the playoffs every year and now gone to two Super Bowls that has more heat than Nick Sirianni. Jalen Hurts was not great his rookie year before Sirianni got there. And Jalen Hurts has been better. They've been to two Super Bowls in 3 years. And he's won 70% of his games. Yet he takes all this heat. And I'm like, guys, you don't accidentally do that in the NFL. He doesn't have Mahomes. He doesn't have some gift horse leading him to all this success. He's made the best. Jalen Hurts has become a really big player with him. But I think he gets way too much heat. I don't understand it based on what he's done as an NFL head coach. He's never finished. He's won the division twice. He's won 14 games two different times. The other years he's been a wild card team. It's just wild to me that it's perceived that he doesn't know what he's doing. He's had a great roster put around him, but I don't think he's always had this kind of roster, and he still made the playoffs. Why do you think, Brandon? Is it simply that, as a lot of people have said, and I think it's funny, one of the most punchable faces in football. Is that it for him? Is it just that he just rubs people the wrong way?
Well, he absolutely does. And yeah, his antics in Arrowhead a couple years ago surely did not help. I mean, yeah, just the way that they collapsed the end of last season. They were one of the favorites, I think, mm-hmm. for a lot of people to win the Super Bowl, probably after week 11, 12. And then I think they end the year losing six straight games, yeah. whatever.
That's why he has been on the hot seat. That's why he's been under fire.
And then to start this year, I mean, they beat the Packers. But then Monday night at home against Kirk Cousins and the Falcons, they don't get it done. And people are saying, yeah, week two, yep, Sirianni's done. Get him out of here. And then they throw up a dud. I remember watching the Eagles at the Bucs in week four, and they lost by, I think it was, three scores. And then it's like, yep, Sirianni might not make it through this week. And that also just comes with the territory of Philadelphia. There's certain jobs where, if you lose the Super Bowl, you might be getting fired. At least fans want it in Dallas.
They ran Doug Peterson out of town, and he won a Super Bowl.
Exactly, in Philadelphia.
And I guess
Jets.
They ran Andy Reid out of town. Yeah. But that's internally getting it. This is a collective, not just Eagles fans that have been on Sirianni. It's like everybody's on Sirianni. Right, everybody's
lost. He's done. The thing is,
they're winning despite him.
You can't give him a pass because he's made some really poor decisions. Whether we're talking in game or he brought his kid to a press conference, and the thought was the speculation was he was trying to deflect attention from the reporters because he thought the reporters wouldn't ask the hard questions because his kid was sitting on his lap.
That poor kid.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not trying to defend him because I don't.
Sure, you
I don't,
are.
No. I'm defending his record. Well, you think I like Nick Sirianni? You think I like anything to do with the Eagles? You're insane. I do not. I just, he's been to two Super Bowls in 3 years. He can coach. He can coach. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Dan Israel joins us in the next hour. Don't go away. More Sports Daily after this.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is that?
Yeah, what is that?
What is it?
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Brandon Zinner in a three-man booth today. Glad to be here with you. We've got Dan Israel coming up in just a little bit. Looking forward to that conversation. Executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Hopefully, Dan's able to join. I just you got me shook now, Tommy. You think I like Nick Sirianni? You think I'm a fan?
No, I didn't say you're a fan, but you do like defending him because I've been rough on him
before. Yeah, because he's a good coach.
And then, you're constantly like, oh, he's great.
Because you're constantly talking about how he's the worst coach in football.
I never said he's the worst coach in football.
Tommy, how many times did you text me this year and say you still think the Eagles are really good? 3, 4? At least? Every week, if the Eagles got down in the second half, I get a text from Tommy saying,
Brandon listed the examples. They played like dog crap early in the season.
They went 14-3.
You're right. And they lost to, what'd you say, the Buccaneers by 3 scores, Brandon, early on in the year?
The Chiefs lost to the Buccaneers, too.
It's an uninspiring schedule.
What do you mean the Chiefs lost to the Buccaneers, too?
Or sorry, they beat them in overtime. My bad. Sorry. Beat them in overtime. Took them to overtime. I just Sean McDermott. Is he a good coach?
Yeah, he is a good coach.
He's got a lower winning percentage than Nick Sirianni and a worse postseason record. So that's what I'm saying. There's nothing that he's put on his resume that why is he not considered? I don't understand.
Did you watch any of the games last season when they were on that losing streak and they just collapsed and fell apart? Did you check out any of those games at all? Did you check out how it was the in-game decisions that blew it for them? Did you check out the way that it looked like the team last season just quit on him? Now, and I just did in our last segment, I just gave the guy credit and said I felt like he had figured out a way to be able to get the team back. But him being on the hot seat and being under fire, not just by Philadelphia fans, but in general, I think was actually well-deserved, because if you watch the way they played at the end of last season, he had lost that team. Credit to him, he brought them back this year. Now they're playing for a Super Bowl. But all of that, we can't go back and have this revisionist history and try to rewrite the way that things went a year ago for them. He was bad down the stretch last year. It didn't start out very well for them this year, but credit to him for getting them back. But we can't just automatically say, oh, he's now amazing, and he always has been. No, he had a bad stretch.
But we're pretending that was the only stretch he's ever had. He went to the Super Bowl the year
before. I'm not discounting that at all. We just talked about Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl for Philadelphia, and they ran him out of town. It's what have you done for me lately? That's the way that the name of the game is, right? That's the way that it's always been.
Yeah, maybe for the Eagles. They gave Andy Reid a long time. Unintended today. I don't care one way or the other about Nick Sirianni. I just think he's proven that he's a good coach or he wouldn't be here.
Never said he was a bad coach.
Anywho, The Eagles are going to bring it in that game. I still like the Chiefs. I mean, I don't think anything is going to happen in the next 2 weeks to pull me off the Chiefs in this one. I still laugh at the fact that they went essentially one loss in the regular season, all the things they did, and like just the mountain of things against them, and they're still here and now they're healthy. I'm not going to go against that, but this will be a fun game to watch, and we'll have all kinds of talk about it. We'll get into it with Dan Israel, looking back, looking forward, maybe looking back probably a little bit more with Dan this week as we get the extra week. This is the big week, though, Brandon. Like, this is the week that matters for the teams. This is preparation week. Like, they do that this week because they have to do all the other stuff next week. Both these teams have been here, so I don't know that that's really an advantage one way or the other. Like, both these teams have done this before. So the work is now. Like, now is the work for the Chiefs. They don't get any time to celebrate yet.
Yeah, especially Andy Reid. He's made it known how he goes about this. I mean, all these years that he has been leading the Chiefs. Yeah, they're treating this like it's a game week. I mean, they showed up. They had a meeting at 2 o'clock yesterday. The Chiefs put out that video. They had a meeting at 2 o'clock yesterday. I'm sure a lot of guys will be in the facility doing rehab and. Then just kind of getting a jump start on the film today, and then yeah, they hit the ground running tomorrow. It's a practice. They're going to do all the red zone, the third down, the fourth down stuff all week long, as if they're playing a game on this Sunday. That's because they're going to have to get on a plane on Sunday, and they want to just be able to refine everything and have some light legs coming up next week. And then it's just gonna be fascinating to see. Mostly. I'm looking for the Spags and slowing down Saquon Barkley, how they're going to attack that, because you give Spags 2 weeks with this personnel group, it's going to be really interesting. James Cook was able to expose them a little bit. I'm shocked that the Bills did not turn to James Cook, especially on that last drive at all. He didn't have a single touch on that final drive, which is a huge flaw by Sean McDermott and the staff. But yeah, 2 weeks for Spags and this coaching staff to figure out a way to slow down Saquon Barkley. A lot of that work is going to begin tomorrow morning.
I, you know what's interesting about that, and we'll get more into this. Like this sounds like a foolish thing to say. I get it, but I worry less about Saquon Barkley like individually, because the Chiefs' run defense is just usually pretty good. Now I will say, and it's not been quite as good lately, and James Cook did give them trouble. But if I go and I'll bet you. That if we look at those games where Barkley just went ham, right, it would be against like really bad run defenses. Does that, you know what I mean? Like I think it has as much to do with that sometimes. Like the Saints, who we went on, the Commanders are the third worst run defense in football. I'm just looking at Barkley's games where he went ballistic. Cowboys, Commanders, Carolina, Rams, Washington, all teams that are terrible run defenses this year. That's all late in the year, by the way. I'm not even going that far back. Those are the games: 146 against Washington, 255 against the Rams, 124 Carolina, 150 Washington, 167 Dallas. Green Bay, by the way, in the postseason was a really good run defense that he got against the Rams, we just talked about, in the Commanders. So, I mean, he had his worst game of the playoffs against Green Bay, but it was still a good game. But I think if you're the Chiefs and you can keep him in that range and just keep him from going nuclear on you, that's a big advantage. And the teams he's gone nuclear on have been bad run defenses. The Chiefs are not a bad run defense. The Chiefs are they're inside the top 10 of run defenses this year. So, I kind of think that part of it is a little bit of an advantage to the Chiefs. They're going to make Jalen Hurts try to beat them.
And I think that you have to also like recognize or try to figure out what would be acceptable. Like when this game is all done and the dust is settled, what is an acceptable amount of rushing yards and touchdowns that you give up to Saquon Barkley? You know, it's kind of like that strategy in basketball where it's kind of like, all right, let that guy get his. You know, and then we're going to try to shut down other people. And, because I think that you can only, you can't stop Saquon Barkley. You can only hope to contain him a little bit. And so I think you almost have to put a numerical value on Barkley. Like, okay, if we give up, you know, under 100 yards rushing. Like if we keep him in double-digit rushing as opposed to triple-digit rushing, and we keep him out of the end zone multiple times, like maybe we, you know, he scores once, but instead of scoring twice or three times, do we consider that a win defensively? I think that you have to almost kind of like put that value on it leading into the game.
I think, Brandon, I probably put it more on the yards per carry than I do. Like if his yards per carry are real high, that's what's going to kill the Chiefs. But you know, if they give it to him 30 times and he ends up with 100 yards, I think you'll take that if you're the Chiefs, right? It's does he break off those long runs and kill you that way, or does he sustain drives? And I think both of those things are what you don't want to see him do. So, you know, if you've got him around 4 yards a carry or lower would be even better. Like, but if you can keep him in that range, which I don't know, he's only been in that range. He's only been under 4 yards a carry 2 times this year, against the Steelers and against the Browns. So that's maybe asking a little bit too much, but if you can keep it around 4, I think you take that if you're the Chiefs. And obviously, you know, Jalen Hurts' ability to run hurts them because we know the Chiefs have been a little susceptible to that over the years. And it's kind of this two-pronged rushing attack a little bit for the Eagles that, in theory, keeps the Chiefs' offense off the field too.
Yeah, Saquon is talented enough that you can probably chalk up he's going to get 2 runs over 20 yards in this one. You can probably chalk that up. He's going to touch the ball. If they don't give him 26 touches, which sounds crazy when you look at the Chiefs giving Kareem Hunt 7 touches. Saquon Barkley is probably going to touch the ball between 25 yep. and 30 times in this game. Maybe at a minimum, the biggest game of the season, he might go over 30 as well. If you can keep him under 5 yards a carry, I think that's probably a win for the Chiefs. I think they have the personnel to be able to attack him in the pass game enough. But, I mean, yeah, Saquon, he's going to get his. If the Chiefs can stop the run enough on first down and get themselves out of second and 4 where they might turn around and give it to Saquon, or Jalen Hurts is going to have an opportunity to throw the ball downfield to A.J. Brown, that's where the Chiefs are going to get in trouble. But this team has been great on limiting that. Buffalo, that's what they do the best in the NFL. But they were stopped on first down all night by the Chiefs defense. So,
and Saquon, he breaks him off because secondaries can't tackle him. I think the Chiefs are better.
Center. Yeah.
Yeah. They're better at that. Watch the corners tackle, I think, is a big key, too. We will have much more. We're just getting started here in this second hour of Sports Daily. Stick with us. It's going to be a fun one.
I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And welcome back, everybody. If you're watching on the video streams, you can see the swag, the gear there for Dan Israel, the trip back to the Super Bowl, the conference championship hat. We were kind of laughing in the first segment right out of the top, Dan, of just how wild this is. Like how yeah, how wild it is to do this, to be here, how wild it is that we never thought we'd see it again after we saw Brady, and now we never have kind of not seen it for 30 years in this league. But here we are. I mean, this is crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, I was talking with Josh Klingler, one of my colleagues, the sideline reporter for us on the Chiefs Radio Network, and his kids are graduating high school this year. They were in grade school the last time the Chiefs weren't relevant in the AFC Championship or a Super Bowl possibility. It's just, it really is hard to imagine. I mean, sitting right behind me in the booth on game day is Brett Veach and the president of the Chiefs, Mark Donovan. When Samaje Perine got that first down, I thought they were going to bust the pane of glass in front of them. They were so excited. I mean, I was watching the glass kind of wobble, and I was thinking, it's going to break. The organization is excited. I think fans are excited. But, I mean, I get there's a generation of kids here who don't understand that this is special. But, man, I'm telling you, for somebody who's worked this game for 40 years, it is truly, truly amazing.
There are so many different things, Dan, to go through with the game on Sunday. And I think that, you know, really, of course, we always start with Patrick Mahomes and just, you know, his will to win, his will to lead that team and, you know, put it on his shoulders to make things happen. And it's equal parts, I think, going through the game, frustrating as it is, exciting to watch because they had moments where they could have pulled away. That's just not what this team does. Like, it's always got to be dramatic and intense down the stretch and then have Mahomes, you know, do something crazy to lead his team to victory. I think that just in the way in which they won on Sunday, but all season long, just kind of tells you all you need to know about this team.
Tommy, they just follow in the script, man.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, man.
No, you're right. I was joking with my brother earlier in the season, and he was talking about how, you know, it just drives him crazy. You know, the Chiefs make every one of these games close. Then we played the Houston Texans in the regular season, and we beat them pretty handily. It wasn't really a game in the fourth quarter. And he calls me the next day, and he says, yeah, that was kind of boring. I get it now. It's like, you got to appreciate I think back to the Gladiator line. Are you not entertained? You know, I mean, it's such an exciting game to watch. And I think in particular, like when you get Mahomes versus Allen, it's going to be the fourth quarter. It's going to be late in the fourth quarter. You know it is. And it's just a matter of who's going to be that guy. I think what's amazing about this is at some point, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you just can't get past Patrick Mahomes. You just can't beat him. And I feel sorry for the Bills. I feel sorry for Bills fans. But the reality of it is Mahomes' experience, the way, the demeanor of this team, they believe they're going to win and they don't stop until they do. And I just think that finding a way to win at all, you know, costs, just I think is really something that served them well, not only through the regular season and through postseason, but hopefully against the Eagles in the Super Bowl.
Dan, in your eyes, just how cool is it seeing the blend of this longtime regime of Chiefs players, the Patrick Mahomes, the Chris Jones, the Travis Kelce's, making their impact in that game, especially Mahomes and Chris Jones, but also blended with these offseason additions with the Xavier Worthies, the Jaden Hicks, and then the in-season acquisitions as well, the Kareem Hunts, the Juju Smith-Schuster's coming back. I mean, this was a very unique one from that standpoint, I feel, just with how everything came together and everyone chipping in on this AFC title.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one part of the genius of Andy Reid and two, part of the tenacity of Brett Veach, who doesn't sit back in training camp and go, all right, we got us a team. You know, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, I know he hasn't been much in this postseason, but I mean, just played some pivotal role, I think, in the development of Xavier Worthy. You know, I think Xavier Worthy has gotten better game after game, and I think watching a guy like DeAndre Hopkins has really helped them. Guys, if I had said to you last week on the air, okay, the guy who's going to be the standout this week, well, Xavier Worthy was great. I mean, I think he was over 100 yards, but is Juju Smith-Schuster. You would have said, is he still on the team? it's amazing how they take these puzzle pieces and they work them every week. It's a different game plan. Every week it's a different spotlight. And I think that's just part of the genius behind this coaching staff, where you've got Kelce looking like Kelce week and not the next, and something else.
We did laugh about that earlier in the week, and I think it goes into, like, they had the long break and it was sort of like they got totally healthy and then they have a 3-week break, and I do think there was a little bit of rust early. It's not there now. Mm-hmm. Now they get another 2 weeks, but, like, if we think about it in the terms of the coaches, most notably, you know, Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo, Now knowing they have all these pieces and now that they have all this time, it's almost like they've had a chance to have another training camp with a healthy roster. Like all the different things they have time to implement and put into place. And hey, Eagles, you've never seen this before because we haven't been able to do it. We haven't had the personnel to do it. I think that's where you get Juju Smith-Schuster plays. And who knows where it comes from in the Super Bowl now because they have all their pieces back.
It's fascinating to me to watch OTAs in May because Andy Reid puts together a practice regimen that he will pull out in November and say, remember the 3 days we worked on this? That's this play. Here we go, boys. And that it's just insane to watch. I used to have the privilege of we do a Monday night show with Coach. Obviously, you guys carry that. I used to go into Coach's office to do the technical end of that, and I would get to see the whiteboard every week. It's crazy. It's like a beautiful mind. It's like Russell Crowe on a pane of glass, you know, doing the beautiful mind stuff. He gets it so crowded, like he'll like play after play after play, that he has to change colors and then he draws them at an angle. So you have two plays that run over each other, but they're two different colors. So it somehow makes sense to him. I look at it and just think, oh my goodness, he's had a mental break, you know, but the ability for him to just continually create. And I think a lot of that's based off of who you're going to play, what he sees in the film, you know, he'll look at the Eagles. And I think, you know, one thing, if you, you know, one accomplishment that came out of the Bills game Sunday was that officially now the tush push has been stopped once or twice. And so we'll see if they can do that against the Eagles because it's such a, you know, it's practically their base offense. It's crazy. But I'm looking forward to that. And I throw in there Steve Spagnuolo because I feel like his genius is equal to Coach Reed's.
You know what, Dan? I think that, you know, talking about Andy Reid and the play calling and, you know, pulling out these plays and different things like that, one of the things that I noticed in the game on Sunday was I felt like they utilized some more designed runs for Patrick Mahomes. We know how dangerous he is on the ground when he's scrambling and trying to go for a first down, convert, you know, whether it's third down or fourth down, whatever that is. But there were some plays where he was rolling out to his right and, you know, had the option to pass it for sure, but it looked like he was going to, you know, take off and get those first downs. Even Greg Rousseau said after the game that there were some of those play calls that the Bills hadn't seen before. Like, they were new, they were different, and that seemed to be an extra wrinkle in the offensive game plan for Kansas City. Now, obviously, they deployed it in the AFC Championship. Who knows what they'll do in the Super Bowl, but I thought that was a crucial part of the offensive game plan that, you know, led to drives being extended for Kansas City.
You're exactly right, Tommy. I mean, I don't think we've seen that all year.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen Mahomes run.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've seen designed runs for him. And talk about, you know, I mean, coaches have styles, right? And a lot of that, quite honestly, is fear-based. You know, they don't do things because they're worried about the possibility of whether it's an interception, an injury, whatever. And I think designed runs for Patrick Mahomes have kind of always been that way. But it just goes to, again, to show the creativity there. When he took off for that touchdown, it was like, I think it was the second touchdown that was the design run. We were like, that is not a decision. That is a designed play where Patrick Mahomes uses his legs. That's Josh Allen's playbook. That is not Patrick Mahomes' right. playbook. But and I do think that he tends to use his legs more in the playoffs, probably because it's the stakes are higher. But yeah, you add to that, and he's deceptively fast. I know Allen is huge. You know, Allen's just hard to bring down. But Mahomes is deceptively fast. And look, you know, sometimes 3, 4, 5 yards is a difference maker.
Well, if there's one thing we know is that we're going to see Mahomes use his legs some of the Super Bowl. He has done it time and time again. Andy Reid talked about it yesterday already. We know it through covering the Chiefs for all these years. All of the prep is really going to be done this week. Take us behind the scenes. What's happening in that building this week as Next week is going to be much more than just football, but this week alone, what's happening inside that Chiefs facility?
Yeah, so, you know, really next week is crazy with the media responsibilities. The team will get down there. I don't have the travel schedule yet, but the team will probably fly down on Sunday, and we get down there, and it every day is a media circus. I just can't explain. I always tell people, you know, if the regular season, if you have a 100-story office building, if the regular season is played on floors 1 through 10, then each successive playoff game is, you know, floor 11, floor 15. And then you get to the AFC Championship, it's like, that's on floor 25. And then you get to the Super Bowl and it's on the top of the building. The amount of attention is just absolutely insane and truly hard to imagine. I mean, I still remember my first Super Bowl in 2009 thinking, this is an absolutely insane amount of attention, you know. But so that's all next week. So they will try to get their practice against the Eagles. They will try to get their game plan installed as much as possible this week. They will have practice next week, so they will go through things, but coaches are furiously kind of putting things together. You know, the staff itself, not Coach Reed, not the coordinators, but the staff below them work on these things prior to the week that they're needed. So you had staffers who were looking at the NFC Championship game, preparing for both the Commanders and the Eagles. And so it gives them a little bit of a jump start when they get to this week and they actually know who they're playing. So they'll work on those things today, this week, a little bit of conditioning this week. And then next week, it's just all about, you know, the Super Bowl. It's media day. I mean, it's a press conference followed by a practice, followed by meetings and really a full schedule. I mean, the players don't have much time next week. So whatever they're going to get done. Here's the other thing, Brandon, that I think people don't think about. So as you can imagine, when you make the Super Bowl, you get calls from your cousins. You get calls from
distant.
Yeah. You get suddenly 50 requests for tickets, and players have to deal with all of that this week, whether or not they have a significant other that might help them, but they've got to coordinate with the team. Okay, I got to get my wife and kids on the friends and family charter. I got to get tickets for my mom and dad, tickets for my in-laws, and all of that has to take place this week. So there's a lot of personal stuff going on as well.
It's a wild ride. And Dan, before we let you go this time, next week we'll really break down the game. But at a bird's eye, the Chiefs have played basically all the best of the AFC all season long. They've not played the Eagles. How do you stack the Eagles up against the Bills, the Ravens, some of these great AFC teams we saw?
Well, obviously, Saquon Barkley's been a difference maker for the Eagles. I do think, you know, fans should be encouraged by James Cook was effective. I don't know why the Bills forgot about him in the fourth quarter. He was not even in those drives. It's like, what are you thinking? But as effective as he was not a backbreaker. And I think that kind of goes to show, you know, if they can keep Barkley in check, look, he's going to score. He's going to score. That's all there is to it. You just got to keep him from, you know, scoring at will and every time he touches the ball. And so I think they can slow Barkley down. I think they can handle Jalen Hurts. They've seen the best of running quarterbacks. They've seen great running backs this year. Frankly, Chiefs are pretty good at stopping the run. You know, I mean, again, Saquon Barkley is going to be a difference for the Eagles in that game. But if you can contain him to some degree and contain Jalen Hurts and maybe eliminate a push or two where you let them extend the drive. And I really think the Chiefs have a great, you know, possibility here. I always find it fascinating, the NFC versus the AFC. You don't play the NFC enough to really know how you stack up against them, but we've played the best the AFC has. And I feel like they're at least as good as the Eagles. So take that for what it is. But I think the Chiefs have a real chance at making history here.
We'll dig in deep next week. Will you be in New Orleans by Tuesday of next week, Dan? All right.
Yeah.
We'll check in from New Orleans with Dan next week, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Dan, enjoy it. I know it never gets old.
It never gets old.
There it is. There's the hat. They traveled. There's the hat. All right, Dan. Appreciate it. We'll talk again guys. Next week. Man, it just is. It's just we're all so spoiled because we cover the team for a living. It's been so relevant for so long now. Even before the Super Bowls, they were good, right? They were winning games. The Chiefs have just been in this straight. How long is it? You said 2012, Tommy, around 13 years of relevance.
Yeah.
13 years of relevance.
Day one when they brought in Andy Reid. I mean, that literally they introduced him and he went out and changed the culture immediately. Yeah, they started 9-0 his very first year. Like, you're absolutely right. It started with that hire.
Unbelievable. Looking forward to it. We'll check in with Dan. Always appreciate it. If you missed anything with Dan, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. If you're on your way into work and you had to jump out of the car, if you jumped in late, you can always listen to Sports Daily that way, even after you get out of the car. The Odyssey app, odyssey.com, you can just download the app, visit odyssey.com, search for KFH, download that Odyssey app today to get started. When we come back, we will talk college hoops. We talked K-State yesterday with Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the Wildcats. We'll dig in a little more to KU, who plays tonight. As we saw some interesting things happen in the Big 12 last night.
We did. Iowa State goes down. That's pretty crazy.
Iowa State goes down. Don't sleep on Arizona, but Arizona was favored in that game. Just so we're all aware of like how they're kind of coming along here. They're also really good. And I don't know if last night's outcome is good or bad for KU if you're a KU fan. But we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about the Shockers who are struggling. Interesting stuff out from Taylor Eldridge yesterday. There is a lot to get to with that. We'll, of course, have more of that. We expect Kevin Saul to be on the program with us tomorrow. We can dig in with him about expectations and what's happening and what can change and all those things. But we'll talk college hoops next. It's Sports Daily. It's Albrock. It's Castor. It's Zinner. We have all kinds of good stuff for you. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great sponsor of the program. We would invite you to give them a call. Check out all the great facilities, even in the wintertime. There's still plenty going on at Crestview Country Club. You can say hi to Tommy and I out there. Some great listeners did over the weekend. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Great stuff from Dan Israel there in the last segment. Go check it out on the Odyssey app. If you're watching us on your video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, 12 News Connected, you can go back and look at that conference championship hat Dan was rocking. Plenty of those over the years for the Chiefs as well. We're going to talk college hoops now, though. Boys, there's something fishy going on here. KU comes into tonight against UCF, a 13-point favorite at home.
They only won by 51 line, last time.
Yeah, it's only 51 on the road last time.
Right.
Like that. What's going on here? Why is that line at 13 points?
Well,
like
that feels like an
Oklahoma State at home line.
They lost to Houston over the weekend in double overtime. You know, like they're coming off a loss. Yeah, tired legs are coming off a loss.
Anybody buy? I mean, you betting UCF?
Am I crazy? I'm going to lay those points, I think, tonight.
Am I crazy here? Like, what am I missing? I can't believe that line is there. And that's what I mean. Something's fishy. And it scares me a little bit, quite frankly, that this game maybe is closer than it should be. KU's got to win these games. KU's got to win all of their games against teams that are outside of sort of that, I would call it top four or five. They sit right now fifth in the Big 12. Pretty much everybody, I mean, let's take it a step further. Everybody outside of Houston, Arizona, and Iowa State, Brandon, KU needs to win those games if it wants to begin the NCAA tournament the way they want to begin the NCAA tournament. I don't think there's any other way.
Yeah, when you look at their schedule, I think the worst of the schedule is behind them until the last two weeks. They get tonight. They're going to go to Baylor and Iowa State. That is two tough back-to-back games in 3 days. But then it's Kansas State, Colorado, Utah, BYU, Oklahoma State, Colorado. They have they have a chance to really make up ground while these other teams are going to be playing each other through the middle of February. The top dogs are going to play each other. They're still right in the thick of things, as dreary as it may look at this point. They're going to have chances to make up some ground. But, yeah, if you're going to, it starts with taking care of business tonight against UCF and putting no stress on yourself heading into Baylor.
Well, and Tommy, I say it looks, you know, they're in fifth, but they're in fifth one get with three losses. Tech and Iowa State each have two losses. Arizona has just one and Houston has none. Like, there's plenty of room for KU to make up ground. But what I think is really interesting, and I haven't pulled up the total net rankings, but it's been, you know, the early in the year, it was all SEC. And while the SEC is still very well represented right now in today's net rankings at 1, 4, 5, 7, and 13 and 16, we sort of waited on the Big 12, but then you're looking and now all of a sudden you've got those top five teams all within the top 12 of the net rankings from the Big 12. So we're getting to where we thought we would be. And that's it. Like, this shouldn't surprise anybody. I think most people before the year would have thought KU maybe was on top of that group of five or so teams instead of at bottom, but it's all there for them, Tommy. What they can't afford is losing any games that they shouldn't lose, right? You can afford a couple losses against these really good teams, probably not at home again, but you got to win all of these other games. If you want a shot.
One of the biggest questions I think is going to be, when is KJ Adams back? And then when he is back, how do they utilize him? And how does that work with guys like Flory Badunga, Rylan Griffin, AJ Storr? What do their minute distributions look like when KJ Adams comes back? Do we see Adams immediately reinserted in the starting lineup, and then all of a sudden, like, he's going to be getting the same number of minutes? Do they try to ease him back in? What exactly does that look like? I would suggest that if he doesn't have to come back today, that, you know, you save him till this weekend. But I don't know. I don't exactly. I haven't heard an update on what that's going to look like for Adams. So I think that's going to be a large part of it too, and figuring out those distribution of minutes with those other guys, especially somebody like Badunga, and how do they utilize Badunga and Dickinson with Adams back healthy, potentially all on the court.
I think it'll be a strength. It may take him a game or two, but I think by the end of it, it'll be a strength. It was a strength when KJ Adams was sort of playing that role and they won a national championship. Brandon, this is a game too where don't we want to see KU with its hair on fire? They should not have lost the game to Houston. They ought to be pissed. Like, this is a game where they need to come out and flex a little bit.
Yeah, and especially if the way Saturday unfolded was just really unfortunate, because Zeke Mayo has been this team's, spark. And then, yeah, he had the bad turnovers on the inbounds late that really just cost them, especially if you're Zeke Mayo. I think this is a game where you want to go out and you want to put on a show and make up for yourself. And yeah, it all begins tonight. What Tommy was just talking about with the KJ Adams, I think KJ Adams is going to come back Saturday against Baylor if I had to pin it.
Yeah.
And then he might get starts, but at this point, how do you not play Flory Badunga?
You can protect him, can't you?
Absolutely.
Can't you use KJ to protect Badunga a little bit and to a lesser degree protect Dickinson from being tired late in the game? Like, KJ Adams may get the same amount of minutes, but in a different way where you're utilizing him to get the best of the other two.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see it. Like, how does he protect Dickinson's fatigue, and how does he protect Badunga and let him, maybe you can cut Badunga loose even more if you're a little less worried about the fouls because you know KJ Adams is there.
Yeah, I think KJ Adams, he'll probably be the one who gets a start, but then he's going to probably play like reserve minutes. He'll probably play around 20. He's going to spell Dickinson some. Badunga is going to get some of those minutes at the five. Yeah, and then how much does AJ Storr continue to play? I think we are kind of done seeing the Storrs and the Griffins playing that four spot next to Dickinson. I think you're going to see two of the three between Dickinson, Badunga, and KJ on the floor probably just about every single minute of every game, probably going out the way, going whenever KJ comes back, because that's this team's recipe to playing their best basketball.
I wish he was back tonight, because UCF's the kind of team, from what we saw in the first game, where if you ever wanted to maybe try to play KJ at the three, this would be the team to do it against. Remember how Hunter Dickinson just absolutely pushed them around. Like, UCF trying to stop all three of those guys. Like, I wish we could get Adams back tonight just to see if that is ever going to be a lineup that could happen in a game where you've got a clear size advantage. Let's talk Shockers here. They are really, Taylor Eldridge wrote yesterday that there could be some changes coming in the program, which could mean the young players get an opportunity to play, including Wichita's TJ Williams, which I think Shocker fans are probably excited about. Tommy, I do not believe that that is a path to them winning the most games they could win this year. However, you like, why not at this point? Like, I think all those ideas of grandeur have to be set aside now. Like, you, like, I don't even, why not go see what you've got in these other players? Because everything else is just, it's been a failure this year.
Well, it's a desperation play. And I get it. I mean, like, look, like, Paul Mills is doing what he can to try to press all the right buttons and pull all the right levers and do all the different combinations. And, you know, if it's not working with the current team, and it clearly is not, then I guess you got to throw your hands up in the air and say, let's try to throw some other guys out there. It is awful that the team is in this position to have this conversation, but, you know, that's where we are right now. And so will any one of these guys, the younger guys, if they start getting more extended minutes, will they be a revelation? Maybe, maybe you have something in them that, you know, has been untapped at this point, and with an opportunity, maybe a guy like Williams or Pipkin or, you know, somebody else can show you something that you can then cling on to for the remainder of this season and maybe even beyond that. I hate that we're talking about it, but it's the reality of where we're at right now.
And Brandon, too, like, let's be fair to those players. Like, that, and that's, I guess, for me, like, I think that it's a change you can make because you're to the point in the season where we can let go of this thought that they should be better. Like, if these young players come in, I just don't want fans to, like, expect them to turn things around, because I don't think that's at all what would happen. I think you're looking at what you've got. Maybe you're trying to light a fire under the other guys. I don't know if it's too late for that or not. I don't really care. You know, it's kind of conference tournament or bust now. But, like, don't watch the young players and expect them to not make mistakes or not do these things because they're freshmen. Like, if these guys come in and play more, then let's realize what it is and take it for what it is and not expect that to be the thing that all of a sudden makes the Shockers start winning all these games, because I think that's unreasonable.
Yeah, and it's all just disappointing and a failure that it's gotten to this point, because everything we heard of in the preseason was this is one of the most experienced and oldest teams in all of college basketball. You brought in guys who had that postseason experience of playing in the NCAA tournaments. I mean, you look, they have 1, 2, 3, 4... I think it's 9 seniors on this team. The fact that it's gotten to this point, and we talk about playing the younger guys. I mean, there are 3 freshmen on this team who barely played. TJ Williams has been injured all year. Zion has played sparingly. Joy has, he's a sophomore, has played sparingly as well. We talk about playing younger guys. What does that entail? Are we going to see Zion Pipkin play 30 minutes a game? And
yeah,
I don't know what going to younger that, guys means.
Taylor's story didn't imply that. Like, that, you know, that I think it's a kind of a wait and see approach to that. But I don't know.
Changes, Brandon, are coming.
Do we have? Is Mills doing availability this week before that game on? Is that game on Wednesday?
They play tomorrow. I don't believe so. I should.
Yeah, I don't think the turnaround was there for that. So,
like,
we'll,
I guess,
see.
You know, I wonder. Like,
it doesn't matter.
As I'm reading Taylor's, you know, article, like, what's the end game? Like, is the end game, like,
I want to know,
throwing away this season? Like, look, it's a waste. We need to put the building blocks in place for next year.
Yeah, I think the end game is, like, if the seed is not hot now, it will be next year, right? So I think the end game is, it's not working. What we're doing is not working. We must change something. Maybe that change makes us better this year, but at least we have a better idea of how to get it fixed next year. We can be real with that. I mean, that's the reality. I don't know how hot anybody's seat is. I have no idea. It's always been complicated because of the paying of old coaches and all the different stuff that happens and the restructuring of college athletics, quite frankly, and how like the financial piece that used to be there 5 years ago is not the same now. So I do not know. And we can ask Kevin Saul tomorrow for his regularly scheduled biweekly interview what he thinks about all of that. And we will. But I'm not sure. So if you're Mills, like put yourself in his shoes. This isn't working. Isn't it your responsibility to the team and the program to try something different for whatever the reason is? Like it's not working. You're losing to Tulsa. That like you got to do something else. Like going out and continuously underperforming is not an option. That's not an option for any of us ever. Right. So it's certainly not an option in that kind of a high profile position. So I think you just have to try something.
And I think it begs the question, how long is the leash? Like how long is that leash to be able to do things like this? And I, you know, regardless if it's the right move to make or not the right move to make, I don't know. You know, I guess we'll find out, you know, if we see some of these guys out on the court and what they can do for the team right away. I guess we'll figure that out. I just wonder how long is that leash to be able to have that carte blanche to like, we got to blow the whole thing up and start over midway through the year.
Yeah, well, that's the part that we don't know. Like maybe they just use this as a lightning rod because, you know, it's still conference tournament or bust. It has been for a long time. That's the part I don't think we know till we see. All right, we got one more to go. We'll be right back on Sports Daily.